King Wei, Spock, Spear, Locke is acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very harsh. Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Teacher Batliff, Edward is an idiot. Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series. You can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series. We're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, December 7th, 2023, and this is episode 567 of this podcast, Hard to Believe. Wow. So, yeah, I don't know what to say about that other than thank you. We have a really great show planned for you guys tonight. If you're fans of Captain Christopher Pike, be it The Cage, be it Discovery Season 2, be it the Short Treks, or be it Strange New Worlds, because, yes, there are four Pikes, this is the show for you because we're going to be talking about Pike in all of his glory. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get too far, I want to introduce to you guys my Trekspurts for tonight. And we have a special Trekspurt joining us tonight in the studio. Well, actually, online. We have TJ Green, and TJ is from Ticonderoga. Welcome to the podcast, TJ.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Great to be here. And it's fun because I get to walk around a recreation of the Enterprise for my job. I mean, who else gets to say that?
That's true. That's very, very true. I wish people would pay me to talk about Star Trek, which they don't. And by the way, I just, while I'm talking, has nothing to do really with TJ, but I just want to let everybody know that's listening that this podcast is not an official Paramount sanctioned podcast. None of us work for Paramount. None of us have, like, inside connections where I can call up Jerry Ryan and say, hey, you want to go out for a pizza? You know, we're just fans like you guys. So I get these messages on our Facebook page all the time, you know, asking about this, that, the other thing. And it's like, you know, I have no say in any of that. I wish I did. You know, if anyone at Paramount is listening, hey, I'm here. Just call me, but we are not official and we're not affiliated in any way, shape, or form with any of the Star Trek products that are officially licensed and produced. So I wanted to get that out there because I'm getting a lot of questions on our Facebook page about Strange New Worlds and Prodigy and stuff like that. And I wish I could give you guys the answers you want, but unfortunately myself or none of my Trekspurts are directly involved with anything that Paramount does with Star Trek. So just a little disclaimer I wanted to get out there. But TJ, how did you get involved in the original series set tours?
Oh, boy. It's a bit of a long story, so I'm going to try to cut it short. As we were kind of talking before we started the show, I grew up in a small town in Poultney, and I was small town is Poultney in Vermont, and so I was already a huge Star Trek fan. I relocated to go work for The Great Escape. Methods of Madness, because it does involve it. A gentleman was performing at The Great Escape the year I started working there. His name's James Colley, and he's an Elvis impersonator. So we got to work together that season, and then through my wife, we kind of got to be friends, and we both discovered that we had a huge mutual interest in Star Trek. So that was pretty cool. I had no clue what he was doing at the time, And so flash forward a few years, it's my wife's and I anniversary, and he invites us up to Ticonderoga because at the time he was still filming the Star Trek fan films called New Voyages at the time. And they had just gotten through the halfway point of filming Torrent of Destiny, I believe the film was called. And so we got invited to walk around the set and kind of take in what was finished at the time. And then hadn't, you know, been able to get a chance to go back up there, but I kept in contact with James, you know, ever since. And then last month, it was just at the tail end of our Fright Fest season at Great Escape, I get contacted by him. And he said, I'm adding you to the staff when it's as soon as you can start. And so I got to shadow my first weekend about a month ago, and I got to see it as the original series set tour. And, you know, I'm still pinching myself because every time I lead a tour now, I'm getting goosebumps every time I walk through a room.
Well, you know what's really cool, TJ? You mentioned that you lived in Poultney. I lived in Poultney.
Poultney's go way back then.
Poultney's not really a big place, and I happen to know somebody named TJ from Poultney who used to come to my sci-fi shop when I had it in Poultney.
Yes, I did, in fact.
Would that be the same TJ?
It is, my friend. It is.
You know, this is such a small world, guys. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. That had to be over 20 years ago.
At least. Cause,
wow.
I remember you were showing the movies on your Laserdisc player in the shop.
Yes. Oh, my God, guys. This is a small, small world, isn't it?
Pretty
wow.
Cool. Pretty
yes,
cool.
Yes, that was we were renting DVDs, and I had a sci-fi shop in Poultney. Jamie was, oh my God, tiny at the time. It had to be 20 years ago. She could have been much older than 5. Yeah, it was a long time ago, TJ. It's great to hear from you. I can't believe it's a shock that when you started talking, I was like, wait a minute, this has got to be the same TJ. There's not many TJs
well,
that live in Poultney.
Your voice when I listened to previous episodes, and I just, like, you know that moment where you're kind of, like, walking around the store and you don't want to be that guy who says, oh, I know you, and then all of a sudden they're like, who the hell are you?
Yep, it's great. It's, wow, great to hear from you, TJ. It's been a while. So, anyways, guys, there's a little history on TJ and myself. We go way back, and to continue on with my Trekspurts, we have with us, we'll swing back to Las Vegas. And in Las Vegas, we have Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. For those that have kept up on the news, the phrase of the day here is UNLV strong and Vegas strong.
Yeah, that's tragic.
Yeah.
That is tragic. It really is. I just don't
it
have
is.
Any other words to say, but terrible. And from Portland, I have my triple play, my trifecta, my hat trick from Portland. We'll start off with the donut guy himself, David. How you doing tonight, David?
Hey, I'm pretty good, pretty good. No donuts tonight, though. I'm eating something called Pop Nuts, so yeah.
Hey, we heard the crunching earlier.
Yeah. It's just popcorn, but, you know. yeah,
wow.
I'm doing pretty good, but, yeah, glad to be here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And also from Portland, we have our very own toy guy himself, Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul?
I know, I'm doing okay, Uncle Jim. I'm doing all right. I'm glad that it's Thursday. I'm glad that tomorrow's Friday. this week's been racing at full tilt, brother. but it's good, and I'm really I'm excited for the topic of the show tonight. I think it's definitely something that will be really cool to talk about, apart from just like what did we just see this week that's new in review. So I think this is a cool theme.
And I just, what did you think about the Playmates news that they pulled the plug on their Star Trek line?
That's a whole thing, man. I mean, it's really kind of a bummer because, you know, they back in the day, they were like the king of Star Trek merchandise and toys, right? Playmates toys. They had hundreds of great waves of wonderful figures, really, really great. And then for whatever reason, they lost the license, disappeared, and we were all very celebratory when they came back on, right? I mean, they had basically one wave, that touched into like all the different, you know, areas of the franchise. They redid some of the classic figures with better articulation. They did a couple of the newer ones. They did some Prodigy stuff. They did a couple of Discovery figures, but... And then we're like, all right, well, with the cadence of like, you know, like people who collect like Star Wars figures, for example, it's not a bad thing to say, but it's, you know, you got to have several waves a year. You just can't just sit there, you know, twiddling your thumbs. And they just didn't really produce. They had one wave, and I think they're trying to come, you know, spin it so that they say, oh, sales were not good. But sales are only good if you have really exciting product. And it has nothing to do with the franchise. It has to do with their handling of said franchise. So I think they kind of dropped the ball. Distribution was a little sketchy, and marketing was really abysmal. You know, they got, you know, off to a good start. They got John Delancey helping them out with some of their early web advertising, but they did nothing with it. And they didn't really revisit. And, you know, most fans who collect have had like a good, you know, 10, 15, 20 wish list long of figures that never got made that would have been great, that wouldn't have required any kind of likeness rights to do, that would have been really fantastic, and they never did it. So I think they got to just, you know, take the blame themselves, Jim. They really shot themselves in the foot. I hope somebody with a little more chutzpah will come along and fill the void, but, you know, it's, they had their shot, and they blew it, and sometimes that's what happens. So a sad day, but certainly not the end of collecting. By any
means. You know, we had the vice president of marketing on the show, if you recall.
Oh, yeah.
Talking with him, and he was telling us of all the great plans they had, and none of it materialized. But, you know, Eric posted on the Facebook page, and I commented to Eric on our Facebook page, and I think you're absolutely right. I think their marketing was terrible, and I think that getting the product out to people was terrible, too. You can't buy it if you can't find it. And everywhere I go, it's aisles and aisles and aisles of Star Wars toys. Try to find Star Trek out there.
Yeah.
It just wasn't.
There's only one. The only retailer really carried it with any, like, consistency was you'd see them crammed in amongst the NECA stuff at, like, Target, you know, and the,
yeah,
and the Funko Pops and stuff. And that's the only place you'd see them, right? And it just wasn't it just was really poorly handled. So it's just – but you got to really, you know – you know, the only way to do this business and do it well is you got to make sure you've got super hardcore fans involved, either as part of focus groups or working for the company. And if you're not doing that, you're just going to drop the ball. We're having, like, Jim, we're having these, like, 20-minute interview segments between introducing each of the Trexperts here. It's crazy.
You know it's a mistake to get me talking about toys, man. It's just like,
well, I wanted to
pass
get
the
you
ball over to Eric, brother.
I wanted to get you
time
top of the show before – before we got too deep into the pike, I wanted to get your input on the whole thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a shame, but, you know, they did it to themselves. They did it to themselves, Michael. You know, it's like, what are you going to do? So,
you know
hopefully somebody else will do a better job.
With all the new shows coming out, they could have done a Strange New World line and started with brand new figures instead of rehashing the old. There's so many things. Playmates, if you're listening, give us a call. We'll set you straight. So
yeah, I mean, I'm bummed out because I've had like a Prodigy hologram Janeway figure on pre-order for like a year and a half. I know I'm never going to see that now. You know that's not going to get produced. So it's just like that's going to get dumped. So the only other place I would that is a ray of hope is there's an overseas company called Hiya
HIYA, Hiya Toys, and they are starting to produce Star Trek figures in a roughly 3-4 inch scale that look pretty good. That you'll be seeing those here at the start of the year, kind of focusing on like the J.J. Abrams aspect of the franchise, those films. But they've been doing a great job with the Alien franchise for quite a while. So I would keep my eye on that, toy collectors, and you'll probably find some cool product coming out from those guys.
So there you have it. The toy guy has set you straight. And my last Trek spurt, guess where he's from? Portland as well. Is our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
Hey, Jim. I'm doing pretty darn good. I'm having a good night. Had a good day. I'm kind of like Paul, really super glad tomorrow is Friday. Don't tell anybody. I'm only working a half day tomorrow, and then David and I are getting together there to play Star Trek Away missions, but keep it quiet. so that'll be a good time. But mostly tonight is Thursday, December 7th, and that means that it, of course, is the first night of Hanukkah. And so we are celebrating the first night of Hanukkah. I'll say Hanukkah Sameach to all the people out there who celebrate. I hope you have a good night. I hope you eat some nice oily latkes and celebrate with your families. It should be a good time.
And, of course, for those in the USA, it happens to be Pearl Harbor Day as well. So...
Yep. Lots of remembrances going out to those people who were involved in that. Probably not many of them around anymore. If you are still around and listening to this podcast, what an ordeal. Amazing thing. But yeah, a returning point in that conflict.
Absolutely. And we, if you're listening to the sound of my voice right now, that we are live. And that means that you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking right now at 646-668-2433. And we'll get you on the air and you can talk with us about Captain Pike, your thoughts on Captain Pike. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we go too far, though, I want to let you guys know that as of right now, we have 132,250 downloads of this podcast, so thank you so much for making that happen. And you can head over to our Facebook page, and over on our Facebook page we have 192,522 followers. We're closing in on 200,000. Eric, can you believe that?
Wow, that's something else. I can't. That's really incredible. I mean, like we often bring it up, but when I joined in 2017, so what is that, 6 years ago, we had less than 5,000 followers. So
yeah,
we're getting popular.
Leaps and bounds. if you've missed any of our podcasts or you just want to know what's going on in the Star Trek world, or maybe you want to see what the Trek sports look like, you know, maybe you want to see just how good-looking Paul really is, if he's as sexy as his voice, okay, you can head over to trektalking.com. And there's a co-host section, and you can read a little bit about each one of us. There's a picture of us. But other than that, there's some blog posts over there, and every one of our podcasts is archived there. So you'll never miss a show. So you can go to trektalking.com to get everything you need. So now that we've got that out of the way, on our Facebook page, at the top, you see a Live Long and Prosper post in with a simple question saying, hey, dude, where are you listening from? And just drop us a line. Let us know where you're listening from. Emojis are good. That'll get my attention. You know, food emojis, little pizzas and stuff, you know, little hamburgers will get my attention. Flags will get my attention. When I look through the post, I pick 20 lucky listeners. And we give you a personal fan shout out on this podcast, which we're about to do. So do you want to get us started with our fan shout outs, Eric?
Do I ever. Our very first fan shout out this week goes out to Akil Ahmed, who's saying hello to us over in Scotland. Akil, thank you so much for saying hello to us, and thanks for supporting us in a beautiful, absolutely beautiful part of the world. I hope to visit one day myself. Live long and prosper to you. Also, hello to top fan Ilonka Liska, who's saying hello to us from Jülich, Germany. Ilanka from Germany, you are a top fan. That means that you just really spend a lot of time on our Facebook page. And that is, of course, it's a natural reaction given how much content we have there. We have so much stuff. Jim keeps us all busy with lots of cool memes, lots of cool discussions. If you browse the comment sections of any of our posts, they go deep sometimes. So, Ilanka, thank you so much for spending a lot of time on our Facebook page and for saying hello to us and supporting our podcast. We appreciate it. Hello as well this week to Patricia Whitman, saying hello to us from Brisbane, Australia, down under. Patricia, thank you so much for carrying our torch down in that part of the world. And Christina Vlad is the last person on my list. Christina Vlad is saying hello to us from, no kidding, Transylvania, Romania. Vlad, sounds fishy or baddie to me, I guess. Christina, thank you so much for saying that.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
All right. I'm going to pass this megaphone over to Charles, who's probably going to bring it back home, I would imagine.
Yep, I certainly will. Welcome to Aunt Z from Silicon Valley, California. Oh, I wonder which part of Silicon Valley. Spent some time there in the mid-80s. Welcome to Lakota Spoolman from Las Vegas, Nevada. Name doesn't sound familiar. I wonder if you're connected to any of the ships in town. Welcome to Andrew Leard, a top fan from the Florida Keys. Oh, I know you're keeping warm down there, not like the rest of us. And welcome to Linda Hayes from Alvarado, Texas. David, who do you want to welcome?
Hello, people from everywhere. I would like to welcome a top fan, Justo Sasa from Miami Beach, Florida, sending us a little picture of I'm assuming that's a palm island with a beach. And next on my list, I would like to say welcome to another top fan, Matthew Buckley from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Heading down. We're going to be heading up, I guess. Saying a welcome to Michael Davis from North Carolina. And then swinging over to the west is a top fan. Hello, top fan Paula Dent from California, USA, sending us a little USA flag. And I'm going to give this off to Paul.
Thanks, my friend. Appreciate it, David. Well, you know, we always like to celebrate the fact that Star Trek fans tend to be united in their enthusiasm for all parts of the franchise. And it is a global phenomenon, our love of Star Trek. It is an international phenomenon, and we are so fortunate here at Trek Talk to have so many folks from across the globe, from all different hemispheres, all different longitudes and latitudes, to come together to enjoy talking about Star Trek together, including Camilla Bonde Larsen from Copenhagen, Denmark. What a fantastic place to hang your hat and reside, Camilla. I hope that you are having a great time there. I know you get your pretty hardcore winters over there, so stay warm. Enjoy a good toddy and keep watching Star Trek. And when spring comes, you'll have some new episodes of Discovery to keep yourselves entertained. So great to hear from you. Thanks for checking in. Really excited to get a big thumbs up here from our friend Marcello Fiore in the beautiful land of Sardinia, island off the western coast of Italy there, from the Principality of Cagliari. There in Sardinia, but amazing place. I'm pretty sure Cagliari is the capital city of Sardinia. I know it's famous for having a medieval walled quarter called Castello there. A lot of amazing 13th century architecture that's there. It's pretty famous. I would love to spend a good long time in that absolutely gorgeous, colorful town. So someday it will be, I may be rubbing elbows with you, Marcello, in a cafe there, because it's definitely a place I would absolutely love to visit. We're going to jump back across the to the continent here and say hello to our good friend Lena Patterson. Lena Patterson is actually a top fan
of ours from the beautiful land of Sweden, flag billowing proudly here on planet Earth. Lena Patterson, sorry, my mispronunciation there. I don't want to do that to a top fan, but it's great to hear from you, and thanks for being a fan and sharing your enthusiasm. And then it is great to hear from our friend a little bit further to the northwest, from Paddy Farrells in Ireland. And Paddy says that I cannot wait until we are united. So I think a sentiment that many people share, Paddy. So just keep staying positive and working towards people sharing their things that they love. And that is the path to unification, my friend. So from the land of Denmark to Sweden, Sardinia, Ireland, and all the other parts on the United Earth, it's great to be able to know that we all have something in common. Wouldn't you say that's true, Uncle Jim?
I would completely agree, Paul. I want to send out a hearty kapla and live long and prosper to David Harris, who's in the Big Apple, New York, New York. Thank you for being a fan, David Harris. I also want to say hello and thank you to Amanda Whitley, who's listening to us in North Carolina, U.S. of A., and top fan Bill Johnson, who's listening to us in Texas and sends us an American flag waving proudly. And last, but definitely not least on my list, another top fan, Robert Hunter. Kapla! He's listening in Wisconsin, and he says, I was one of the tribbles on Star Trek, and flashes us not one, not two, but three. Live long and prosper. That's how you catch my eye. So
we
got to
get
Robert
on the podcast, Jim. I mean, yeah, if he was like literally on start, we got to get him on, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'll work on that. he's a top fan. And how do you become a top fan? You go to our Facebook page and you interact. I put up questions, polls, everything. You just head on over there and interact. And one thing I want to point out about our Facebook page is I spend, Charles as well, we spend a lot of time trying to keep our Facebook page safe for you guys as fans. And we try to get rid of people that are disrespectful, people that are attacking fans, people that that are trolls. Let me just say that. So, you know, you can pretty much feel safe and going to our Facebook page and being yourself there, that you won't be harassed or bullied, because we try to keep that to a minimum. That doesn't mean that you're not allowed to say, I don't like this or I don't like that or I like this and over that. That's perfectly fine. It's attacking other fans that's not. So you can feel safe at Trek Talking. All right, guys. So we've done our fan intros and you've met all the Trek experts, and now it's time for the meat and potatoes. No, I'm not talking about Leslie, of the podcast. And as I said on our Facebook page probably 2-3 weeks ago, I put up a post asking our Facebook fans to score the cage on a score of 1 to 10, with 10 being the best. And Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about the cage?
Well, Liam Heffernan gave it a 9. The cage is a brilliant piece of TV and sci-fi story. It can be a little slow at times, for which I would have scored it lower, but since it is where Star Trek began and released years later, it holds up nicely and gives us a great insight into the universe. Thanks, Liam. Top fan Jacob Kyler gave it an 11 out of 10. Sorry, Jacob, we have to average that down to a 10, but we appreciate your enthusiasm. The best Star Trek episode for me. Wow, love it. Super cool. Top fan Mike Pontos gave it a 9.9. The characters, for the most part, are full. You can get an idea of the relationships between Pike's quarters, aside one of my personal favorites. Well scripted, well acted, good story. Thanks, Mike. Top fan Johnny Gold 7, which is a great name, gave it a 10. It's still amazing, thoughtful, well-written, one of the best scenes of any Star Trek episode. In Pike's quarters with Captain Pike and Dr. Boyce, there it is again, talking about life and giving up on Starfleet. Thanks, Johnny. Brian Kane also gave it a 10, stands out on its own as a great science fiction movie, even if Star Trek had never become a series. It has a very different feel than the rest of TOS, but it's smart and atmospheric. Absolutely, Brian. Janet Sutherland gave it a 5, was not keen on this episode at all. I can understand why it was rejected. Top fan Michael Riley said a solid 10. Looking at it from TV standards and technology at the time it was produced, 1964 to 1965, it was astonishing even as a standalone story. Not fair to compare it to the now 1,000-plus Star Trek episodes that followed over the next 50 years. On its own, The Cage was many years ahead of its time. It is in its own category in the history of not only Star Trek, but science fiction overall. Thanks, Michael. Jeff Simpson gave it a 6. There are reasons the network passed on the original pilot. They were able to break it into 2 to make it palatable with a new format. I think that's probably a Menagerie reference, if I was guessing. The Spock character was not believable as an unemotional Vulcan where he had to carry the energy load because Jeffrey Hunter was so flat as Pike. Shatner was the perfect over-the-top performer to play with Nimoy's restrained Spock. Top fan Mick Schnaufer said, as a standalone piece of science fiction, especially in 1964, it's an easy 10, although I'm definitely a Bill Shatner fan. I've always wondered how different Star Trek would have been if NBC had said yes to this pilot and or Jeffrey Hunter would not have quit. And finally, top fan Carl Graves gave it an 8. Very good show in a lot of ways, but I think if humans hated captivity as much as the Talosians say, it would have been impossible for them to keep Vina alive for 18 years. Also, they should worry about inbreeding. Really, they should beam down the entire Enterprise crew and use them for breeding stock. Also, I think they give up on the Talosians a little too easily. We could have used them for translators with any aliens we happen to meet, thereby giving a plausible explanation for why everyone seems to understand English. On the other hand, how do you have military secrets or much of any kind of other secrets in a society that has thousands of telepaths that can read minds and create Commodore Mendez illusions 8 days away at maximum warp? Do we want to give any of our characters this much power to some extent? I have the same question about the next generation Betazoids. Very thorough, Carl. Thank you so much. And that gives us, guys, a combined fan score this week of 8.3 for the episode.
Wow. Not too bad. Not too bad. And before we dive in, we have a caller on the line, guys. Our phone number here, as I said, is 646-668-2433. And let's get the caller on the line. Well, hello. How are you doing tonight?
It's a backstory.
How the hell he got into the world?
Ray, it's a backstory.
Hello.
Hi,
Ray.
No, it's called Strange New Worlds.
Strange New World. That's right. What's happening, Ray?
Hey, Ray.
Hey, what's up?
Kaplan, how you doing, man? Ray? What's happening down in the Bronx?
Kaplan. Listen, Uncle Jim, may I ask you a question? I tried to text you guys yesterday. I texted, but I don't know you see my text.
I don't think I saw it. I definitely would have got back.
Okay. Like I said, I'm fine. I'm all fine. But I just want to know, do you have another contest for Star Trek Strange New Worlds second season?
Unfortunately, we do not. I reached out to the company that provided them for season one to find out if they were going to do the same thing for season two, and apparently they weren't giving any away for season two. I don't know why.
I don't know either. I know. I mean, that's what we call. I gotta buy it. But anyway, you show my cousin Pike segment. You know what? Yo, I'm telling you right now. The second season is really good. You know what I'm saying? But I'm waiting for the part once they read to the Delosians. That's what I'm waiting for. I know it's gonna take them at least like 2 or 3. Season 3, season 4, around there.
You see the Talosians season 2 of Discovery. Well, they show up on Discovery in season 2. When Pike ends up back, you'll see the Talosians in season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, along with Vina as well.
Wait a minute. Time out. You mean to tell me that I got to watch Discovery? They give that part with the Delosians. I could have sworn Discovery is a backstory too.
So Captain Pike comes on Discovery season two as the captain when Lorca goes back to the Mirror Universe and that whole story. So in season two of Discovery, Captain Pike is the captain of the Discovery, and they go back and hang and meet the Talosians and Vina, and that whole story unravels on Discovery season two.
Jim.
Okay, you know what? Season two, episode eight.
Yep.
Season two, episode eight, Discovery.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? How you guys doing? How you guys doing these couple weeks? Happy Thanksgiving to you all and your family.
Thank you, Ray.
Same to you, Ray. No problem.
And okay, I'm gonna look in a few minutes. Okay, and one more thing. Do you guys have Heroes and Icons down there in Vermont? You know the show?
Yep.
Guess I watch right now.
I do.
Star Trek episode with Beth of Terror.
Excellent episode.
Hey, that's my best one.
Yep. By far.
Hey, okay. So anyway, my family, everything else is fine. So, one more thing about sports. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know why he's back there for the Jets, Coasty Brothers, I'm not too sure, but you know what I'm saying, I want to keep tabs.
Absolutely.
The Jets, football. Rocky Taz. But anyway, I'm gonna say this. The Captain Pike story is interesting. You know what I'm saying? But now I go to season two, eight, right? Okay, I got that. And I'm gonna go out and watch it a little while. And then if it had time tonight, I'm gonna try to go back.
And you know what's cool about that episode, Ray? Pay close attention to the way it begins. Because it begins with the episode that we're going to talk about tonight, The Cage. They tied it all together with a flashback at the beginning of the episode. I think you'll like it.
Whoa, wait a minute. You mean tell me they're going to tie them together like that? They're going to tie them from The Cage to that together?
Yep. Go and watch it. I think you'll like the way they do it. It's a really good episode.
Copy that.
For sure.
I'm going to do it right now.
You will not be disappointed, Ray. I promise you. You'll like it.
No, listen. I will not say. I don't want to say like that, but also, I'm not going to be disappointed.
You'll like it. All right, Ray. I hope that you and your wife have a very merry Christmas and a very happy New Year. And we'll talk to you again real soon in the future.
No problem. I'll be here.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Ray. Enjoy the episode.
I will. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling, Ray. Bye-bye.
Anytime. Bye.
All right, guys. That was Ray from the Bronx. He checks in with us, you know, quite frequently, and he's a huge fan of Captain Pike. So are you guys ready to talk about The Cage and Captain Pike?
Before we do that, though, let's dive right in.
I got a little clip.
Wherever our mission takes us.
This is going to be crazy.
I'm trying to have a little fun along the way, too, huh? Make a little noise.
This is going to be crazy. I don't even know why this is coming like this.
Yep. It's good. It's good for sure. So the one thing I wanted to start off with was, one of the things that got me interested in Star Trek way back in the day when I was, you know, teenage Jim, when I was discovering Star Trek, was the fact that there was a two-part episode called The Menagerie. And the first time I saw The Menagerie, and I realized, wait a minute, there was a captain before Kirk. There was a whole other missions that happened before this. And immediately the fact that Star Trek had its built-in history just pulled me in, and I was hooked. Unfortunately, I would have to wait until 1991 when they released the Cage in its original form. It was half black and white and half color, because the Cage was originally filmed in black and white, and they went in and colorized the parts that they put into The Menagerie to show on TV. As you guys recall, one of the big things for Star Trek was now in living color. So they had to colorize. They had to go back and do those scenes in color. The original parts were all in black and white, and it would switch black from black and white to color and black and white to color. And there was a little introduction by Gene Roddenberry on the laser disc telling you all about it. And I was so excited when I got to see The Cage in its entirety the way it was meant. And so I'm really excited to talk about that tonight. So who wants to dive in and get us started with the Cage? How about you, Paul? You want to jump in and start us off with The Cage?
Sure, man. I will just say that I'm super biased, because I'm just unabashedly positive and enthusiastic about this corner of the early. I'm like a lot of our listeners, I'm very much an old school original series guy, because that's what I grew up watching on the TV set, sprawled on the carpet, right? And it was just always super engaging. I mean, that was like, you know, the fables and myths growing up with, right? And like you said, when you found out that, whoa. And of course, we all got it through The Cage, right? Through the two-parter. I mean, through The Menagerie, the two-parter, right? And to get this whole, like, flashback, this earlier story, that there was another captain in the early days, and whoa, the ship looks different. The phasers look different. They have to like grip the front of them and turn them. I mean, that was so cool, right? You got to see this kind of rust, and we all know it's like the early production version, the early design of things, but it just made it seem like you were going back in time and seeing this earlier story about, you know, something in Spock's past that we didn't know about. And it was really cool. The fact that they were able to take that episode and cut it together the way they did was just compelling as hell. And that there could be another captain of the Enterprise who was different from Kirk, who didn't express himself the same way. And, you know, during that time, we get this look at what is Pike like? Well, he's kind of, when we see him in The Cage, he's a guy who really, he's kind of at the end of his rope, right? He's probably drinking too much. He's feeling sorry for himself. He is, he's kind of in despair. He's like, I'm not doing a very good job here. I just got a bunch of people killed. And he's kind of down. He's thinking about hanging it up, really, at this point when we first meet him. He's in a down place, which is really interesting, right? Because he's not just the stalwart hero. He's a guy who's failed and screwed up. And I think that is absolutely fascinating. I think that is really a great character intro. But he's a tough guy, and they do their thing. And it's just, I just love the way that Pike was introduced. There's a lot of cool things that we see, however you want to look at it, you know, The Cage or The Menagerie two-part or whatever. You get pretty much the same content in there. You get a different doctor, because it's all pre-McCoy, right? Pre-Man Trap, different doctor, different era. It's fascinating. You know, if you need to go and do a thing, right, they will go down and they can transmit this massive freaking laser cannon down on the ground, right, and transmit the full brunt of the ship's power to try to blast through the top of a rock. That was cool. They're wearing like these cool, like, you know, 60s tinted goggles, and they're trying to blast the top of this mountain off. And the whole story is just about, you know, the power of illusion and what you can be made to think you see versus what's really there. And just so really good, pulpy classic science fiction tropes, man. The kind of, you know, during the heyday of like Asimov Science Fiction Magazine, Analog, this is the kind of stuff that you just couldn't get enough of. And to see it on TV was incredible. And to be a kid growing up with that was just amazing. So I'm a huge fan of this episode. I'm a huge fan of like early Pike. And then, you know,
to see what happens to him later, right? And the way they he was depicted in the menagerie in the two-parter, it's just terrible. You know, he's just it's like the worst thing you can imagine. He's just like, he's still alive, but he's trapped inside of his body. And the idea that your brain can still be doing its thing, but your body has betrayed you, I think is something that a lot of people who experience disability can really relate to. And it was just really compelling. So for me, it's just one of the most fantastic touchstones of science fiction and television history. A massive fan of both The Cage, The Menagerie two-parter, and the character of Captain Pike, regardless of which iteration he is. But in particular, Jeffrey Hunter. I mean, he was just great fighting the Kalor man. That's one of the greatest Star Trek scenes ever. It's just like, and dude shows I up also, with those teeth and the battle axe, and it's just like it is your, you know, life or death. I just thought it was great. So,
and the fact that Spock had emotions, which you know, can set some fans off, but Spock has emotions in The Cage. He doesn't have later. Well, Strange New Worlds wasn't around yet, so you know, we'll get to that later. Spock has emotions. He smiles. He's emotional. And so they hadn't fully fleshed out what a Vulcan really is yet. So to see Leonard Nimoy emoting is really, really cool, too. And, of course, Major Barrett Roddenberry is number one, is awesome. So there's a lot in that first episode, a lot of stuff that was changed between The Cage and Man Trap was actually the first aired episode, but I think Where No Man Has Gone Before was actually the first filmed episode, but here or there. But you're right, Paul. It's really a lot of fun to go back and watch it. And I don't understand why they thought it wasn't Star Trek, because it worked perfectly as the menagerie in the new formula. So why they wouldn't have liked it, and as one of our fans had stated, you know, how different would Star Trek be had they bought that original and not turned it down? You know, I think it would be much
different. Well, you know, I mean, it probably wouldn't be that different. It would just be different in terms of the personal interactions of the characters. So, you know, they have written slightly different stories, but it's hard to tell. Sorry, not to like take the mic here, but like there's just not quite enough information here to talk about chemistry between the crew, because this is essentially a Pike by himself goes off and does something episode, and you don't, you know, the very beginning you get a little bit of interaction with the crew on the bridge. Other than that, you have no idea how he interacts with the crew. The most information we have about how Pike interacts with the crew from The Cage is actually the info we get from Phil Boyce when he comes into his quarters there with his portable bar, and he's like, you know, he's like, you know what? Drink this warm martini and let's talk about how you care about your crew more than you care about yourself, and you take care of your crew more than you take care of yourself. And that, to me, is the real magic of The Cage, because they set up that as what you were saying, Jim, about him kind of being like burnt out from the war or the thing on Rigel 7. There's this idea that he's always thinking about somebody else before he thinks about himself. And I think that's probably Pike's number one defining quality, honestly. Like, I think that the difference between him and Kirk, you could sum it up in many, many ways. But one way that I might sum it up is to say that Kirk looks for a way to win, whereas Pike looks for a way to make sure that everybody's taken care of. And there's a little bit of the winning thing, because there's also the side of Pike here. I guess I'm going to keep the mic now, where he
it's
says,
good,
you know,
man. I love it when we just go back and forth.
Yeah,
that's
he says, you know, he says in this, there's a way out of any cage, and I'll find it. And I think that's another one of Pike's defining qualities, right? He's like, he's a guy that it doesn't matter how down he is, how depressed he is, how bad things are going, somehow he kind of finds a way to push forward.
I think the word you're looking for, Eric, is he's a survivor. He's trying to survive, and so he does that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. He does whatever he can to, like, keep moving the ball forward.
Yeah, you never really see – I'm trying to – because I haven't had a chance to rewatch any of these this week, guys, right? So I'm just going off of memory, but haven't seen it, like, 150 million times, right? But do we ever see Pike as Jeffrey Hunter? Do we ever see him laugh one time? I don't think so.
No, we see him admit that he's, like, attracted to Vina in this episode, but we don't ever see him actually smile or really, like, enjoy anything. He's always thinking.
He did smile when he met Vina for the first time.
Oh, you're right. And, he's looking down at her with the bedroom eyes, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not, like, laughing with the crew. Laughing with his crew or anything.
No, that's what I'm saying is, like, the crew interaction stuff is zero in this episode, more or less, aside from acknowledging that he's uncomfortable with women on the bridge, but number one's different.
I know, right?
Well,
when I heard that, I was like, oh, man, was Gene Roddenberry actually thinking that number one was actually supposed to be an alien, you know, and not human? I was like, with that, I was like, okay, so that's an interesting take on what Discovery did. Oh, not Discovery, sorry, Strange New World. Converting the whole idea that she's not really human. So I was like, that's interesting. When I saw that, I just had to keep going back to watch that particular scene because when her facial expression, she kind of like doubled look back at Pike
after
he said that. And it almost made it sound like she was about to give away that she was not actually human kind of thing. I was like, was that originally planned by Gene Roddenberry? I was like, huh, that's
cool.
Cool.
I love that.
Well,
that's a great idea,
dude. Really pulled me into Pike is what the very first episode of season two of Discovery, when he comes on the bridge and he puts his scores up and he says, what is it, the F I got in astrobiology or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks the crew for a call out and he says every single crew member's name. And to me, that's a sign of respect because we never heard Kirk do that. We never heard Picard never did that. We never had a captain. We never had a leader acknowledge each and every one of his crew by name. And that I was like, wow, this guy gets it. This guy is cool because, you know, respect is earned. It's not bestowed. And the way he took over the bridge of a broken crew that had been betrayed and lost their confidence in their leader, and he got it back just by being human. And that stood out to me, like, wow.
So you're saying that Star Trek Discovery writers actually paid attention to establish canon about a character when they put it? That's so weird, man.
Absolutely not.
Weird.
Well,
now you're talking crazy, Eric.
Yeah, come on. Slap that boy.
Next thing you're going to be saying is that they write for free and don't get paid. Yeah.
Let me throw in with the time crystals, where he gets to see his future and get to see himself in that wheelchair, which ties it directly in the menagerie in saying that actually did happen.
That's right.
So that we could sit there and say, because we'll say, oh, well, Pike's, whatever happened to Pike. But we know what's going to happen to Pike, and we're not deviating from what TOS did. We still admit there's something that's going to happen in the future. And
you know,
that's an issue that's weighed on him.
It is.
And weighing on him.
He's like the perfect Shakespearean tragedy character because it's like no matter what Pike does, he's always – not only is he doomed to like be in that sort of physical shape at the end of the day, but you know even in this episode in the cage, we were just talking about the Rigel 7 thing, then he's thrown literally right back into the horror that he just came from back in this episode when they take him on his little mental journey and he has to fight the – what are they called? The giant dudes? Sorry, Paul.
Kalor.
Yeah, again. Yeah, so it's, to me, Pike is like the, it's like Star Trek allegory for having shit thrown at you over and over and over again and still getting up and making it happen, like keeping the ball moving forward.
Huh. And the episode, the title escapes me, the episode where they remade The Balance of Terror, what episode was that?
Can we talk about Strange New Worlds?
Yes, he goes back and gets the time crystal and tries to change the past and wears the monster maroons and goes back and tells himself, you can't change it because if you change it, Spock is going to be horribly mangled. Oh. What was that episode?
You're talking Quality of Mercy.
Quality of Mercy.
And he had to accept his fate at that point. And I thought, you know, for that character, he's trying to save all those kids that died. He's trying to – I forgot the name of the character. There was one kid in particular in that episode, Ali Khaseed Mahal or something.
Something like that.
He's trying to save that kid's life, and he wants to save that kid's life in the worst way. And he finds out that I can't save his life without sacrificing others. And for a character like Pike – to come to that realization that no matter what I do, I can't save this person, you know, it's got to be really tough for him to come to grips with that, but he does. You know, he does.
Yeah, I'm actually, the more and more I get into the whole Pike storyline from original series to Discovery to Strange New World, I'm starting to realize that they really put a whole lot of time and effort into creating from what little they had to go based off of decades, and starting to make it seem like this is actually now my favorite captain throughout all of Star Trek history that we've seen so far. And just the way that they tied in bits and pieces with, like, in Discovery, you know, goes back and visits the Talosians, and the fact that he discovers the time crystal, and the character itself, it just seems so much more better than
three-dimensional.
Any other captain.
Yes, okay? He has a full background, a full, he's not just that one guy in that one episode.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what, though?
You have to realize.
I want to give our guest Trekspert TJ an opportunity to jump in here because we're the talking heads and TJ is our guest.
We have a tendency to talk over everybody.
And we have
you just
got
to jump in there,
about...
brother, because we'll just keep on acting like a bunch of drunken hooligans. So you got to just jump in, bro.
To jump in here, TJ, and share your opinions on Captain Pike and the Cage.
Oh man. it's hard sometimes because I'm so intrigued with a lot of what you guys are saying because it helps kind of build what I was thinking of my perspective on Pike, which is, you know, he's this character that accepts his destiny. He doesn't necessarily challenge it, but what he's doing is making the journey to that destiny worth it. So when he, you know, when we see him in the cage and he starts out and he's, you know, very self-reflective and he's kind of realizing, you know, he might be unhappy with, you know, the same old, and then, of course, like kind of, you know, recognizing, hey, I was forced into some mistakes, but I made them. And then all of a sudden, you know, seeing his fate and then going, you know what, I'm still going to do my job. I'm still going to do my duty and make the journey, make the end result count, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also think, TJ, in the episode Such Sweet Sorrow, when the Enterprise gets the photon torpedo in the hull, the episode where Admiral Cornwell sacrifices herself, one of the good admirals, by the way, sacrifices herself, and Captain Pike is like, well, you know, if my destiny is to end up in the wheelchair, then this missile cannot explode if I stay in the room and you leave. And that was an interesting ethical conundrum right there.
Well, yeah. It's leveraging that, like, time knowledge thing, which is a very timey-wimey thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
at the same time, guys,
if the character, if Pike knows that he cannot die, that this is his destiny, then he becomes like, immortal. He can do anything because nothing can affect him. And at that point in time, the Admiral says, like, no, you need to get out of here and let me take care of this. And I was so grateful that they did that, because it took that could have been potentially dangerous edge out of the character, because now he's not going to be quite as he's not going to be living on the edge, because he feels that he can't be hurt. So I really liked the way they handled that in that episode, and they put that right to rest. I thought that was great.
Let's take a look at the cage too, because you guys, all of you, hit it right at the gate. Is sacrifice is in Pike's nature. But it's not sacrifice for the sake of it. He wants his to be meaningful. So when he, in the cage, when he goes and he's like, hey, I'll stay if you let my crew go. Like, he sacrifices himself. He even is willing to stay for Mina, and kind of, he's ready to take the hit to save somebody else. He might be flawed, but he's selfless enough to go, if my taking this hit can, make sure that somebody else can live their journey, he'll take the hit.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, go ahead.
Would he have chosen number one, or would he have chosen Colt? Because Colt had the high sexual drive and attraction, but number one had the computer brain. And, like, when they gave him the choice, he never got to answer the question, because they got out before he could pick who he was going to pick. And when Colt asks him at the end, who would you have picked, he didn't answer the question either. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, we'll leave that one alone, bro. So,
yeah.
What's fun to think about, too, is a little kind of trivia thing that I think is fun to think about, right, that I always enjoy is, if you remember in original series episode Mirror, Mirror, right, we find out in that episode that Kirk, he was able to ascend to command of the Enterprise because he assassinated Pike. I mean, that's canon in the Mirror, if you don't mind me making a canon statement. I know that's kind of ironic, right?
But, it is, yeah.
But, but I just love that reference. It's like,
canon
is
fine.
It's all right. Within, it's fine. Like underwear is fine. You don't want to wear it all the time, right? But
when it's useful.
But it can be helpful in certain situations, but if you want to live in it 24/7, I don't think so. So I think that's a cool thing there too. And then we got to talk a little bit about the JJ verse, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that's important to spend in if you want, the Kelvin timeline, as it typically gets referred to, right? But we do see Pike over there, as portrayed by the great Bruce Greenwood. Right. And it's interesting because they kept the wheelchair thing. They kept the fact that he was injured, but it wasn't nearly as traumatic of an injury in terms of the way it's depicted. Right. He's still able to speak. He's still able to get around, express himself. And then I think in the second movie, in Into Darkness, he's only using a cane instead of a wheelchair there. Right. So he's just it's not as bad of a thing, but it's a whole alternate reality. So you can get along with whatever. Right. But Bruce Greenwood, I don't know if any of you guys have watched House of Usher on Netflix or not, but man, that guy acts up a firestorm in that show. Really, really great actor. And so it's cool to go back, over a dozen years and see him in something like this, which is just wild. So really cool to see all the different facets of how Pike's been depicted. And now he's probably more popular than ever because he's like a household name now because of the success of Stranger Worlds.
You're right, yeah. Paul, because in the Kelvin universe, in the Kelvin movies, Pike is the mentor for Kirk. Pike is the one to Kirk. Pike is the one that guides Kirk. Pike is pretty much, like his mentor, the like the you know, his guiding
the
light.
Figure, yeah.
Which
yeah, he's like encouraging him. He's like, join Starfleet.
Right.
Yeah.
He's the one that goes out to the bar and finds him, you know, beat up and bloodied and says, hey, dude, like, you need to join Starfleet and be a hero like your father. He's the one that gets him into Starfleet. And we don't get to see that in the Prime universe because when we meet Pike, he's already in his wheelchair. So we don't get any of that interaction. And I think that's really a great part of the character that they show us in the Kelvin movies.
Yeah, also the fact that Kelvin versus Pike did not get the time crystals like they did in the original. So makes me wonder if it wasn't for Burnham in the original and it kind of like brought off into a different timeline, I suppose you could say, like an alternate universe, was Burnham ever actually in the Kelvin timeline? Because if it wasn't for Burnham in the original, Pike would have never gotten the time crystals. So to me, I was like, huh, that's kind of interesting to think about.
Well, there's no crossover between Burnham and the Kelvin timeline.
Well,
no.
I mean, the
yeah, because Burnham didn't even exist when those movies were made.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah, so it's just, that's all retroactive, man. That's all,
yeah.
You know, it's,
it's still fun to
that's what
about
I like to call, that's
just
what
exists.
I like to call bar canon. Yeah, it's just like, you know, you know, what if that happened? And, you know, I,
yeah.
You know, fun
well,
to consider,
so
fun to consider for sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Charles.
I want to go back to something David said. And he talked about how rich the character is. One thing when they write series like Star Trek, and I think they really did a strong job of it, is the writer's room puts together a book that describes who the characters are. And I think when we first started in Discovery Season 2, they had sort of a page written down. As the series went on, that season got through. I think that description of Pike got more complex, deeper and deeper and more character driven. That by the time we got to Strange New Worlds, we got a very rich, very good captain that we were cheering. We wanted to see more of him. Remember the fact we didn't expect Strange New Worlds. And it's like, everybody's like, we want Pike. And you kind of wonder if maybe Discovery, they were planning on offshooting Pike. That they realized they had such a gold mine in there that they needed to do that series.
I think, Charles, that what they did was Pike was such a popular character on Discovery. I don't think and this is just me. I don't think they planned on making the spinoff at that point in time. But when they started doing the short treks and introducing those characters on the short treks, because don't forget, we do get to see Pike in the short treks as well. And when they introduced the character on the short treks, that's when they said, wait a minute, wait, we got something here. And I think when they tested the character on short treks without the Discovery backdrop, just Pike and Number One and Spock as themselves to see how they could carry it, that's when they said, wow, we got something here. And that's, I think, is when they decided to make Strange New World. I think they were thinking maybe with when he was on Discovery, but I think it was the short treks popularity that said, yep, we can fly with this, we can do it, and that's when they did it. Because don't forget, a lot of people forget short treks.
And I actually want to bring up one more Pike that we don't bring up very often. And I think we got a lot of character development there. And Eric, I think, will agree with this one. The Enterprise incident. We got a real strong dose of Pike and how unconfident he was at times.
Mm-hmm.
Unsure, thinking of giving up. We saw a lot of that in that episode, and I think that push is saying, we got a stronger Pike in Discovery because he was getting his confidence back.
Absolutely.
Back at-
yep.
That was a
yep.
novel, even if it was drawn out. It was a good novel and a focus on that crew.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a great book.
That Pike was only in 15 episodes, 15 of Discovery, and two short treks, The Cage and The Menagerie. And out of all of that, they made Strange New Worlds, which is only 10 episodes each. And he's still one of the most, I feel, one of the most fleshed out and popular captains. And he has probably the least screen time of Kirk, Picard, Sisko, Janeway, all of them. And he's such a strong, well-written, powerful, thoughtful character, you know?
Hmm.
He's very mm-hmm. well fleshed, very well written. And
yeah.
Fans love him, even though his screen time, I mean, a lot of people were complaining in season two of Strange New Worlds, he wasn't even in the first episode. Remember they had the whole court thing and he wasn't even there. He was off trying to find a lawyer in that first episode, The Broken Circle. He didn't
mm-hmm.
even, you know, he wasn't even in that one.
No, that was season two.
And in The Broken Circle, he wasn't even in it. And in the court one, he was only in it briefly. So, and he's still one of the most beloved captains. So, you know, I think what they're doing with him is something that the fans want.
It's true.
Right.
And
didn't Kurtzman say that it was the fans who brought upon the Strange New World? Because I thought he said something like that in an interview once, where he said if it wasn't for the fans, Strange New World wouldn't have existed. So,
well, yep.
I think people were
because so many people liked what kind of captain he was in Discovery.
I think that's what
and
it
I
was.
I think the mix of Discovery and the Short Trek, fans were out pushing, saying, we want a Strange New World series.
Well, and honestly, Discovery kind of proved that we could tell another prequel story and people would be okay with it, would actually watch it. And so people saw Pike and they said, okay, well, this is even more interesting to me because it's the prequel before Kirk and I love Kirk and I want to know what happened before Kirk in a more detailed
mm-hmm.
way. So can we, before we stop this segment, I think one thing that we should talk about real quick are, and not in a nitpicky way, but just in a kind of like overall way, what are some of the big differences that we see between Jeffrey Hunter's Pike and Anson Mount's Pike? Are there big differences? I mean, I think Anson Mount spent a lot of time trying to model himself, but not everything is modeled. So, you know, does anybody have any comments on that? Front?
Not what I can think of.
I'd say comparing Jeffrey Hunter's Pike to Anson Mount's Pike?
Yeah, I'm just curious because,
I would say it's really interesting because they're both, I think they're both really products of the times that they were made in.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's the main thing, right? It's just like, okay, it's really tempting to just go, well, you know, Jeffrey Hunter's Pike is, you know, the lantern-jawed, irredoubtable, you know, like, you know,
totally.
Stiff, frickin' never smile, just like, you know, I am the hero, like the Tick or whatever, right?
Because
he seems very humorless, right? But that is like kind of the trope of the day, right? He is the frickin' grab the ray gun, do the thing, I'll stare at you so hard your forehead will crack, right? I mean, he's a tough guy, right? He's in... You know, they humanize him by making him, be succumbing to foibles of fear of failure, right? Which is why
the
character works
story.
So well.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, I mean, but you compare him to is everything that's going on with, you know, Pike on the new show with Anson Mount. He's so likable, right? I mean, he calls his crew by their first names. Nobody
mm-hmm.
does that in Star Trek, right? You don't see that, Picard might call Riker Will every now and then, right? But that's about it, right? Or Beverly, you know, but only like when they're off duty. But you don't call your, you know, your crew by their first names on the bridge. But he does all the time. He's very much, he wants to be an accessible captain, this new Pike. He's informal, I think tremendously so. And he goes against the rules a lot in terms of, you know, I mean, the decisions he makes that he feels from his code are more for the greater good. You know, he'll steal a starship and do whatever is necessary, or, you know, avoid doing something that, that, you know, he thinks he's going to get in trouble from April and everyone back at Starfleet for doing, right? Because he's more willing to just be driven by his own personal code and what he feels is going to be, protect the people that he's responsible for. And he's very sentimental about that. So I think that's an interesting way to separate the two characters, the two interpretations of the same character. How does that fly with you, man? Does that seem legit?
Totally. Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think the product of the times is kind of the right way to frame that outlook, I think, on the two portrayals, because what they did back in the day was they tried to say, okay, here's our strong hero. We're going to present him as strong hero who can, you know, break out of any cage. And we're just going to kind of tell you on the side that he's a big softy and that he really cares about his crew. Whereas Strange New Worlds is like, no, dude, it's the 21st century. We're going to show you that he cares about his crew because the proof is in the pudding. So, yeah.
And
I totally
be really
agree.
Interesting. Like if, you know, they end up doing, you know, I mean, it's interesting how, you know, like Charles is saying, right. You know, for a while, we didn't know we were going to get this thing, right. We're, you know, they're kind of just waiting to see fan reaction, right. Kind of with, you know, the way things are for like Star Trek Legacy right now. Right. It might happen, might not, but it's just if everyone's really active on social, better chance of it happening. Right. Because it's all about they pay attention to this stuff quite well, but it's also very interesting to see, like, you know, I think we're in that same hypothetical could be maybe universe with Paul Wesley's Kirk, right? I mean, we may get a full-blown reboot in another 3 or 4 years of a brand new early days Kirk and Company Star Trek original series, which if done well could be really interesting. But he's not going to do Shatner because, you know, kind of, let's be honest, I mean, you know,
He doesn't need to.
I'm a cool guy myself, but it's just like, but you know, the Kirk character is a little bit dated and misogynistic in some ways. It's like, hello, Lieutenant, your gluteus maximus looks wonderful today. I mean, you know, it's just like that's not going to fly the same way on in, you know, 2025 or whenever that show gets greenlit, right? But it'd be interesting. But I think the audience is there for it, right? And where like a few years ago, people would say, oh, reboot, original series, new Kirk, I don't know. But look at the reaction this new guy that played Scotty got this year on Strange New Worlds, right? People dug that guy, like, big time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, he was great, right? And so it's wow, Peck is really growing into Spock and making him just, that guy can act. He's a terrific actor. Mm-hmm. He's growing into character. So
and Stringer.
You just got to wonder,
and, you know,
man.
Speaking of Spock, though, speaking of Spock, Paul, I think something that's pretty awesome here is we are getting to see why Spock risks his entire career and steals the Enterprise for Captain Pike.
Great point, brother. Good point.
Yeah.
The two really solid.
Yeah
they because have they've got that history, and of course he's going to do it. Absolutely. That's a really, really excellent point.
So now we're seeing Strange New Worlds, and we're seeing why Spock. Because everybody associates Spock with Kirk, because that's what we all grew up watching, right? Kirk and Spock, Kirk and Spock, that brotherhood that they have. But people forget that before Kirk, there was Pike, and Spock risked everything to get Pike back to Telogia. And now we're seeing on Strange New Worlds why Spock was willing to do that for Captain Pike, and that's a whole other side of the character that we never got to see. So I think that's great as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of the stuff that we see in the original series, as far as like the menagerie and the arcades, are all starting to tie together with the Strange New World. And if it goes on for another 2 or 3 years, I think we're going to get a lot more explanation of certain things that a lot of the other things kind of like left out, you know. So,
So, TJ, what do you think? Do you want to add anything to the conversation as a guest truck expert?
Yeah. I was just about to jump in and say I feel personally that Hunter's Pike was two different evolutions of Pike in the same episode. Like, if you look at the first half, he's very self-reflecting. He has regrets. He's very, you know, not just, you know, emotional, but very, you know, intellectual about it. He's analyzing himself. And then you get to the Talosians and you get to that particular trauma that he's going through. I mean, he is being tortured in a very different way, you know, and all of a sudden he has to be reactionary. Like, he's, you know, he goes off the handle, and by doing that and seeing the surprise in the lead Talosian's face, he realizes that primitive emotion, you know, or primitive mentality is a block to the Talosians. So that split second reaction gave him a strategy towards the tail end. And then when they brought, you know, number one and, you know, the other crew member onto this, you know, into the situation, he had to react again, because at that point it was the shock of, you know, his crew being dragged into this when it was only him. You know, he was all right dealing with that, knowing he was the only one, you know, and then now with him being a true captain and being responsible for his crew, now he's got to go back to trying to find the mental balance of, well, now I got to pour through all this hate and try to make sure that he can't, you know, get a sense of what we're trying to, you know, what we're trying to do and what we're trying to, you know, no pun completely intended, but discover. So he does. He has those two major evolutions. And then since you asked to compare it to Anson's Pike, I feel like Anson, over the course of Discovery, had a very direct, I don't want to say similarity, but I want to say continuation of Hunter's Pike. Like, you could tell where the inspiration was coming in, and then the brilliant way they wrote him over Discovery and Strange New Worlds shows the compassionate Pike, the Pike with a, you know, dry sense of humor, and who has this bond that is completely different from Bones McCoy, you know, Bones McCoy, Spock, and Kirk, to this very familial dynamic between, you know, Pike number one and Spock. So there's some differences, but I don't want to think of it as differences so much of a continued evolution of that character.
Huh. Yeah.
Cool. Yep.
Well, I think one of the other big differences is that they are two different guys, so.
Yeah. Thanks, David. Thanks for keeping it real, man.
Well, I think like Paul hinted at, that one of the biggest differences is Jeffrey Hunter's character was written in 1964 and had different opinions than Anson Mount's character, who's written in 2024. So,
yeah,
so TJ,
it's like, if you go back and look, there's not a lot of Jeffrey Hunter comedies, right? I mean, he was cast because
true.
He's like
not
the, you know, he's a tough guy, right? He's like the, he's got the steely blue eyes. I mean, he played Jesus, for crying out loud.
He
right?
did.
So,
yep.
So it's just, there you go. But
TJ,
it's always interesting.
On a scale of 1 to 10, our Facebook fans scored an 8.3. What would you score The Cage if you were scoring it 1 to 10?
Who are you asking, Jim?
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah.
TJ.
TJ, got it.
Oh. Oh, okay. Thanks. Objectively, I would put it probably closer to a 9. I think it's a very intellectual episode, but a very, you know, at times very dark episode for a purpose. I think it gives us not just Pike, you know, and his evolution, you know, I mean, I say that, but you go through that episode and you definitely see it. It gives us the dynamic between the crew, and it, you know, like you said, you know, there's a reason why Spock goes as far as he does. I think the acting was absolutely superb. I think the Talosians were written very malevolently, but then all at the same time, they end up with a slight redeemable quality. I really don't have what I would consider negatives that would drop my score down. I just think that for that episode at the time, and considering it was unaired, I really wish it had gotten aired, even if Kirk still took over, because that particular crew brought something to the table, and then clearly we see what Kirk's legacy has become due to Pike. So I would rate it a 9.
A 9. All right. That's cool. That's cool. How about you, Charles? What do you think? 1 to 10.
I think I'm going to go with an 8.5 on this one.
8.5 from Charles.
On it.
That's cool. All right. How about you, David?
Well, I definitely would originally going to say 8, but before I go any further, I do want to mention that I thought it was really interesting in the cage, Pike, even though he referred to, what's her name, Una, as number one, which makes the title of a first officer, right? So I would have figured that she was, but in the cage, she referred her to as lieutenant, which I thought was a really weird change, but considering that there was a timeline gap, of course, she probably made number one first officer in the Strange New World. So I thought that was a very interesting take on rank. But as far as we've been talking more and more, originally, like I said, I was going to make it an 8, but I'm actually starting to lean towards what TJ was just saying, that I'm probably going to be giving this either a 9 or like a 9.5. So I'll go in the middle and give it a 9.3.
9.3. All right. How about you, Paul?
Oh, gentlemen, you make me sad. You make me sad.
Anything. We have to give you're going to be giving us a point?
Anything less than a 10 is sacrilege. Sacrilege, in my opinion. This is like, you know, it is like we do not walk past the Great Pyramid of Giza and say, well, you know, it doesn't have a mailbox slot, so screw that. I'm taking off. I mean, it's, please have some hubris, have some dignity, have some respect. Absolutely, it's 10. Otherwise, you're whistling past the graveyard and tempting the gods. I would give it a 15 just to make up for the rest of you. But,
okay, you can have my point.
Absolutely. It's like, you know, like Forbidden Planet, right? There would be no Star Trek without Forbidden Planet. That's inarguable, right? It is basically the template, you know, and there would be no Star Trek without the cage. It casts a really long shadow. It set everything in motion. It is the template. It is where everything else comes from. Those designs, those archetypes, those tropes. It is absolutely historic. So for me, absolutely 10.
A 10. All right. And this is from Paul. Wow. How about you, Eric?
Yeah, I 100% agree with Paul. I actually had written down here I was going to give it a 10, even before that most excellent summary. But yeah, I agree. Like I said, it's as the template and as the thing that like became the thing that became all the other things, I think it deserves that kind of spot in the upper echelons. And there's not too many episodes that I would rate a 10, and none other that are first episodes of a season or like inaugural episodes. So this is my only inaugural 10 episode of all of us in Star Trek.
Well, I got to give it a 10 as well, but I got to give it a 10 for the pulsing veins in the heads of the Talosians.
Yeah, I know you love them.
I mean, that when I saw that, it blew my mind back in the day. I was like, oh, my God, their veins are pulsing in their heads. That was the coolest thing I ever saw. And it just, I always remember the pulsing veins in the Talosian heads. It was just so cool. But I think that it embodies Star Trek. I think the cage is what Star Trek is. It's very intellectual, very inward reflecting. It makes you think. And to me, that's Star Trek. And the fact that this episode was never aired, was never part of Star Trek at all until they cut it into the menagerie. They cut it up and made it into Star Trek, part of Star Trek history that became a part of Star Trek history and history, you know, and it's just a very unique place to be. And I love it. I love it for that fact. So I'm giving it a 10. So there
you
have.
I got a quick question about the cage episode. I'm pretty sure you guys know, but for people who don't, do we know who made it possible to be put onto air?
They never aired it. It never was put on the air.
Well, no, like 1991, you mentioned that it was finally put on air.
Oh,
do we know who did it?
1991, it was released on LaserDisc, which TJ had mentioned. And I had a LaserDisc machine, and I had to run out because I wanted to have a piece of Star Trek history, see it as it was meant to be. So it was released on LaserDisc. I think it came out on VHS maybe as well.
Yeah. I was really lucky, man, when I was, like, in high school, right? This is, like, in the 70s, right? But in the early days of conventions, and right, here in Portland, we had a Star Trek convention, and the guest of honor was Gene Roddenberry. And the thing that was really cool is that he brought the original episode of The Cage. This is before home video. There was, there was really no – I think they were just getting started on, like, beta – right, but VHS wasn't even a thing, and he showed it. Right, it was a screening, and he showed it like a movie. And we got to all, we'll just sit there, goggle-eyed, just watching it. And it was see the little differences from here and there from the menagerie. But that was a real cool early experience for me. That just like one of the reasons I'll revere it forever is getting to see it in those circumstances was just tremendous.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So as far as I know, David, I don't think The Cage ever showed on television.
Oh,
I think
the streaming services picked it up
until streaming came along. You can catch it now.
I think they showed it on the Sci-Fi Channel once. I don't know if you guys remember the Sci-Fi Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but I think they had like a special holiday thing where they got permission somehow and they showed it one time. I do remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they might have.
Well, it's interesting that I look at my date of when episodes were released. And I actually have a release date, Cage, of October 1st, 1988.
Hmm.
So there may have been like a VHS release or something. Then not long after Next Generation aired.
Hmm.
Cool.
Next Generation aired in 87, and 88 we got Cage.
That would have been the 20th anniversary or something like that. That's what I remember seeing.
Probably
it.
Something around then, yeah.
So, anyways, there you go, guys, our conversation on The Cage and Jeff. And I want to say thank you, TJ, for hanging out with us tonight. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, no, I had a great time, honestly, and hopefully, if y'all will, I'd love to come back. I hope you'll have me back.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We had a great time having you, and it was great to talk to you again. It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe
you,
I'll swing by and give me a tour.
I'm sorry?
Maybe I'll swing by the set tour, and you can give me a tour.
That'd be great. Speaking of, because I know we mentioned the Shatner. Did you want me to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, sure.
So it was, you know, it was very surreal because, you know, I never met Shatner before. Like, I was a little nervous going into it. It's my, you know, my first what they call the VIP event on staff. And I was pretty much given the heads up that every version of chaos it could possibly be, just be prepared because it was going to be. And what I got to see and experience was nothing short of life-changing. And I mean that in a very positive way because I saw not just people who were dressed up and in Starfleet uniforms, and I'm pretty sure I saw Gorn in there at one point or another. I saw, like, I wasn't friends. I mean, you know, these people didn't know each other, and yet it was everybody interacting as if they did. And that was just the start. And then I get there Saturday morning, which is when Shatner showed up, and I was told that I would be joining in and you know, helping, you know, make sure that people were, you know, in there and listening to, you know, what Bill had to say. And to hear that man at 92 recounting detail for detail how he not only filmed the series, but just his emotions behind everything. And then we get to the end, and he does his bridge Q&A, and I got to witness this 92-year-old icon talking to people, having a legitimate conversation, asking questions of the people who were there and wanting to learn. I mean, he's been on this earth for 92 years and he still wanted to learn. And by the way, that man at 92 could still throw a punch. I got to witness that. And all I got to say is it made me not only proud, but happy again to be a fan of Star Trek. And I realize that, you know, I get to even remotely be a small part of helping people get to walk through, you know, very well meticulously recreated sets and see people who are, well, you know, I've seen hardcore fans of Trek, and I've seen people who were dragged along for the ride. And the people who were brought along who had no clue what Star Trek was started becoming more interested in seeing what was going on. And you know, that's very humbling, guys, you know? It is very much.
Well, TJ, I just have one question. Did Shatner actually answer the question, what does God need with a starship?
No, he no. Never answered that question.
He never answered that? Okay. That's cool.
He brought it up. He referenced it several times, but he never answered the dang question.
All right. Well, that's cool. That's cool. So anyways, TJ, we're going to move on to our birthday section of the show. And so I just want to say thank you for hanging out and sharing your stories with us and talking with us about Pike and about the cage. And it was a lot of fun to chat with you again. So thank you so much, TJ.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you, guys. It was a lot of fun. And I'm glad we got to reconnect there, Jim. I mean, especially with the fact that you were responsible for my first viewing of both the cage and the menagerie at your shop. So the fact that we can, you know, kind of have a semi-reunion tonight is pretty epic. Thank you, guys. Huge.
That is pretty cool. Thank you so much, TJ. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. All right, guys. So now it's time for Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
Okay, Grumpy Worf, that's cool. All right, guys, we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by, sadly enough, remembering those members of our Star Trek family who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we're going to remember five members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us. The first is actor Robert Simons. Robert Simons was the actor who portrayed Vedic Porta in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine four-season episode Ascension. Robert had an extremely distinguished theater career through the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and then made the transition to film in 1973, of course, when he played Dr. Taney in the acclaimed 1973 movie The Exorcist. Did a number of television roles after that, and if you were a child in the 80s, you probably saw him on something. I mean, he was on MASH, Quantum Leap, Charlie's Angels, all those shows. So Robert Simons would have had a birthday here this week. Happy birthday to Robert. Happy birthday as well to Malachi Throne. Malachi Throne was the actor from New York who appeared in three episodes of the original series and two episodes of Star Trek. He provided the voice for the Talosian Keeper and appeared as Commodore Mendez, and then the Keeper part of his recordings was electronically altered so that it didn't exactly sound like him, but it was in there. You could hear it. Anyway, Malachi not only did that stuff in Star Trek, but he was actually Gene Roddenberry's first choice for the role of Dr. Phil Boyce, believe it or not. But he did turn down that role because he didn't want to play the third man next to the hero and his sidekick. Presumably, I guess that's maybe Pike in number one. But yeah, interesting decision. Throne expressed his interest in playing Spock, but Leonard Nimoy, of course, got that gig. So he eventually got the other parts that he got. So I thought that was kind of cool. 2 years later is when he played Mendez for the Menagerie. But Malachi Throne does have over 100 film and television credits, including both acting and voiceover work to his credit. So happy birthday to Malachi. Happy birthday as well to Nicholas Coster. Nicholas Coster was the actor who played Vice Admiral Haftel in the Star Trek Next Generation third season episode, The Offspring. And before you ask Jim, I'm going to put him on the naughty list. He's a naughty admiral. I don't really care for him. But Nicholas Coster was an extremely prolific actor, has over 170 television movie credits to his name, probably best known for his soap opera work back in the day. He was an Emmy Award-nominated character on Santa Barbara, where he played the same character from 84 to 88, and then again from 1990 to 1993. Appeared in lots of other things, appeared on Facts of Life. Remember him? Yeah, he was David Warner, the millionaire father of Blair Warner on the Facts of Life. Interesting thing about Nicholas Coster, he actually had interactions with a bunch of Star Trek captains outside of Star Trek. In 1978, he and Kate Mulgrew had roles in the epic miniseries The Word. And then the following year, he was actually on Mrs. Columbo, if you remember that spinoff back in the day. In 1983, he made a guest appearance on T.J. Hooker, of course, with William Shatner, and then went on to appear with Scott Bakula on an episode of Mr. and Mrs. Smith in 1996. So Nicholas Coster, lots of little crossovers here and there with Star Trek, and also a very respected and revered and prolific actor. Happy birthday, Nicholas. Happy birthday as well to Karen Landry. She was the actress who played the Vorgan Azure in the Star Trek Next Generation third season episode Captain's Holiday, Outside of Star Trek, she's definitely best known probably for her recurring role as Mira White during the first three seasons of St. Elsewhere, a fantastic television show from the early 80s. Several television series, you know, MASH, Highway to Heaven, you can look her up, see what she did. She shared an Independent Spirit Award nomination for co-writing the screenplay to the 1988 comedy Patty Rocks, in which she also played the title role, and then did a couple of television movies and a couple other screen appearances along the way. Happy birthday, and lots of love going out to Karen Landry. And finally, on our remembrance list, we have actor Ted Knight. Ted Knight, we lost him way too early at the age of 62. He voiced the part of Carter Winston in the animated series first season episode, The Survivor. He did not receive screen credit at the time, however, which is kind of interesting. And he's definitely best known for being the buffoonish newscaster Ted Baxter on the Mary Tyler Moore show back in the early 70s. Was on Close for Comfort, if you remember that show from the 80s.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
Eventually did appear in Caddyshack as well.
Caddyshack.
Yeah. He's the judge in Caddyshack. That's right. Yep. That's right. So his birthday was today, guys. He was born in 1923. So that means that if we still had Ted Knight with us today, today would be his 100th birthday, which I think is pretty darn cool. So happy birthday, Ted Knight. We do miss you. Lost back in 1986. And I'm going to pass this flaming birthday candle over to Charles.
Charles?
Unmute.
Okay.
Okay. Start off a happy birthday to Golden Brooks, who played Alicia Travers in Star Trek Enterprise's four-season episode, Stormfront. Dan Gauthier, who played Sam Lavelle in Star Trek's Next Generation seven-season episode, Lower Decks. Happy birthday to Mark Robert Brown, a child actor who portrayed Don Lydon in Star Trek, the original series episode, and The Children Shall Lead. Didn't spend a lot of time in Hollywood at that time. I think he's got like 5 credits to his name. So I'm sure he moved on to something else. Happy birthday to Jin Malley, who played Ensign Esmar in the third season episode of Picard. And happy birthday to Alex Knapp, American actress who provided the voice of Enterprise's computer and Star Trek's Strange New World for 12 episodes. Paul, who's on your list?
All right, brother. Well, thank you, Charles. We got all kinds of folks that we still have to say happy birthday to. Let's get rolling and move it on down the line. First of all, I think it's hilarious, and it's one of those things that you just sometimes it's easy to forget, that famed comedian Sarah Silverman was on a Voyager third season episode, a couple of them back-to-back, Future's End and Future's End Part 2. But Sarah Silverman, the great, hilarious, unfiltered Sarah Silverman, played Rainn Robinson on those two episodes of Voyager. So go back and check that out if you got Paramount Plus dialed up tonight. It's pretty cool to be able to see back in the day, right, before she was not quite as ubiquitous as she is now, that she was out there taking all kinds of jobs, including Star Trek, which is cool. Happy birthday goes out to Andre Dai Kim, who plays Chief Kyle in the first season of Star Trek: Strange New Worlds. A little different take on the character than we've seen in the old school Trek. Happy birthday to actress Vanessa Smythe, who played Harper on the Strange New Worlds second season episode, one of our favorites here on the show, Under the Cloak of War, which is just an excellent episode. Happy birthday to Eugene Clark, played Commander Chiv in Strange New Worlds second season episode, Ad Astra Per Aspera, which is a great, great episode. We have a lot of Strange New World stuff going on in this segment here today. And then happy birthday as well to Canadian actress Samora Smallwood, who played Lieutenant Amin in the Discovery second season episode, Such Sweet Sorrow, Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, as well as the Star Trek Short Treks episode Q and A.
passing it over to Uncle Jim.
Well, we're almost done. We've only got a few more here. And, of course, I saved the Klingons for last. So we want to say happy birthday to Ella Gross, the Korean-American child model and actress who portrayed a young version of Soji Asha in Star Trek Picard first season episode, The Impossible Box. We also want to say happy birthday and Jolan True to Eduardo Roman, the actor who played Vulcan number one, the mind meld Vulcan, in Star Trek Picard second season episode, Mercy. We had him here on the podcast, and he was a lot of fun to talk to. Big Star Trek fan. Go to trektalkin.com, look up that episode, that podcast, and give it a listen. He was a lot of fun. We also want to say happy birthday to Leon Russom, who played Commander-in-Chief Bill in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and Admiral Todman in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, third season episode, The Die is Cast. And Eric, Admiral Todman, where would you put him on your list?
Ooh, that's a good one. I didn't have the one. You know, Jim, I'm sorry. I don't have him ready to go. I'd have to remember what he's all about in that episode. It's been a little while.
Yeah. I think I would put him in the evil column,
would
personally.
You? Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to wipe out the Dominion. He allies with the Cardassians and the Romulans. And
I do remember him. Yeah, he's kind of like Doherty, where he's doing what he thinks he needs to do to win the war, but it's absolutely shady. Yeah, so it's hard to say. Like, it depends on your perspective, I guess, on those types of guys as to whether they're good or bad. But I tend to put him in the evil category for sure. Naughty list.
I definitely would. And I told you guys I had some Klingons. Well, here they are. I want to say kapla, a hearty kapla to Brian Bonzel. And who is Brian Bonzel? He's the former child actor who played Alexander Rozhenko in seven episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. And last on my list, sticking with the whole theory of family members, we have Tony Todd, who portrayed Worf's brother Kern. And this is a shocker, in only four episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, four. Now, guys, doesn't it seem like Kern was like a much more prolific character than only four episodes? Doesn't it seem like he was there a lot more?
He's just great, dude. The first time we meet him, I think it's the first time we see him, and he's the dinner scene where he's just, you know, gnawing away at like octopus leg and just insulting everybody, and just, he's got no filter, and he's just he's super arrogant. I mean, Tony Todd's the man. He's a big genre guy. He's in tons of movies and stuff. He's just such a great dude.
Yeah, but it just seems like he also played grown up Jake Sisko as well in an episode. But it just seems like when I saw that he was only in four episodes as Kern, it blew my mind, because Kern is one of those characters that you just never forget. He always seems to be there, but he really isn't.
He was part of an arc, right? He's introduced, and then later he's part of that multi-episode arc all about, you know, Worf's familial honor and stuff, which I think are hard-hitting episodes. So that's why we probably remember him, because they're just really good episodes.
Yeah, he's in all those, you know, he's in the Klingon Civil War episodes. He's in the Gowron episodes, you know. Then he goes to Deep Space Nine, and Worf rips out his memory and turns him into someone else. He's always around. So happy birthday and kapla to Tony Todd. Well, guys, that wraps up our birthdays for the week. And, Paul, do we have some time to do a quick story?
I think we do, brother. We've got like about 7 minutes left. Do you want me to take lead on this first story that's on the docket? Go right there.
Yeah, jump right into it, because that's very relevant to the case.
All right, man. I will do so real briefly here, but I think most fans know, old school fans know, you see that logo come up, right, on the original series episodes, Desilu Studios. Well, Desilu is a reference to Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, right? And we would not have Star Trek without Lucille Ball period. It's hard to imagine, I know, where we are right now, a world where there's no Star Trek, right? But and we've got multiple TV series, including all of the bedrock of Paramount Plus, novels, movies, comics, the whole gamut, right? But that wasn't always the case. And the original pilot that we've been talking about, The Cage, it wasn't received so well. But the series got a chance to continue and find new life thanks to a very surprising source, Lucille Ball. She rose to prominence with the comedic show I Love Lucy that a lot of our, you know, some of our older listeners may remember. I know I'm one, thanks to syndication and reruns. But it became one of the most popular sitcoms in history. And that success was major. And it let her and her husband, Desi Arnaz, form their own production studio, Desilu Productions, a little history there. So underneath Desilu, right, TV shows including The Untouchables, Mission Impossible were made. These were huge, successful, exciting shows. And they eventually divorced in 1960. But Lucille Ball, one smart cookie, she ended up buying out the remaining shares of Desilu in 1962. So she became one of the first female producers to head her own studio. And she used that clout to secure the rights for Star Trek. And she had to go through a lot of different stuff. She had to convince her board members that the show was worth it. The original series pilot, The Cage, it didn't exactly set the world on fire at the time. Oh, the NBC executives, it's too cerebral, too intellectual, and too slow. Where are the breasts and the gunfights? You know, I mean, they were just, you know how these guys are, right? I'm sure nobody works with people like that. But Lucille Ball eventually stepped in, and she financed a second pilot, Where No Man Has Gone Before, which would serve as the series premiere for Star Trek, the original series. Many of Desilu's board members objected to spending so much money and time on the project, but she apparently thought it was a show about actual Hollywood stars traveling across the globe for USO shows. So, sweetheart, read the scripts. It would be what I would recommend. I don't know if that's true or apocryphal. A lot of these stories over time, stuff that's, you know, a little goofy becomes realer than it might actually be. So we shall see. But the whole point is she was a supporter and she remained a major part of continuing the funding for Star Trek, the original series, and making sure that it got on the airwaves in the first place. And friends, the rest is history.
And of course, Cybok, Lawrence Luckinbill from the best Star Trek movie ever made, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, is related to Lucille Ball. So there you go.
Both wow, what a small world it is.
It is a very small world. Well, guys, with that, believe it or not, it's over. Can you believe it?
I wish it could go on forever, Jim.
It just, wow. It just, time flies. But at any rate, I just want to say thank you to TJ. It was great to hear from TJ again. I haven't heard from TJ in over 20 years. So thank you so much to TJ for hanging out and chatting with us tonight. And thank you so much to Charles for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight as well. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, thank you. Enjoyed.
And thank you so much. Well, David already left, but thank you so much, David, for hanging out with us. And thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Paul.
Super good time, man. Had a blast tonight. Really great to honor the old school stuff.
And I love Pike. He's the man. And thank you so much to Eric as well for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I love these themed shows. They're super fun. I love digging into these characters at a deep level. It's really fun.
Let's do more. Yeah. I like it, too.
So I want to let you know what's going on. I've been pretty busy here trying to get shows set up. So December 14th, we're going to have Andy Bray Trek Sketches on Chekhov's Christmas. And that's going to premiere on the 13th. And we're going to have Andy and Mr. Chekhov on with us on the
14th. 13th or 14th, Jim?
The 14th. The
Got
episode
okay.
will drop. The episode itself, Chekhov's Christmas Vacation, will drop on YouTube on the 13th. We're going to have Andy on the show here Thursday night on the 14th.
Got
and
it.
You guys know, if you've ever listened to any of our shows with Andy Bray, especially when Chekhov comes along, it's a lot of fun. So you definitely want to check that
Makes me
out.
Laugh just thinking about it.
can't wait to hear what you got to say. I'll give you a little hint. Chekhov and Sulu get in a duel over who celebrates Christmas the best. And if you guys have listened to Andy Bray, you know that there's some animosity there about their children and whatnot. So it'll be a lot of fun. And on Tuesday, December 19th, we're going to have Robin Curtis, who, of course, played Star Trek 3, and Avaj Potenza, who played Mr. Spock at age 13 in Star Trek 3. And that's a Tuesday night, so Paul won't be with us, but Andy Bray will be joining us as well to see if he can fill Paul's shoes for that particular show. And I've got some other shows that I'm working on, but those are the important ones right now. So make sure you join us for those. They're going to be a lot of fun. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying to everybody, please stay safe, be good to each other, and remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Night, y'all.
And prosper.
Take care.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hello, you have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.